late third quarter, they ended up 9-1. What happened there? And offensively, it seemed like you guys settled for a lot of threes, or took almost 50. But
I was just finished reading a great article that you wrote in 2016 that the Celtics shot too many threes and they shot 42, and that was 7 years ago. And we only shot five more tonight, and they lost 121 to 114, and you blame the offense, but not the defense. So, like, what's your fascination with too much threes for the last 7 years?
Well, it's 7 years.
2016. It's 2023. I just read it. It was a great article.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. But it was like, are the Celtics settling for too many threes? You said that 7 years ago. You're ahead of the curve.
I am ahead of my time. offensively.
I don't think it was the third quarter, Gary. I thought it was the second quarter when we gave up the offensive rebounds in the transition. We had some sloppy play. And you go back and watch close games, they're never really lost in the fourth quarter. Sometimes they are. But if you look at that run in the second quarter where we gave up like three or four straight offensive rebounds and then we didn't get matched and gave up a three, I think it was lost there. But, you know, perspective. I thought actually this was one of our better played games from an execution and a mindset standpoint.
All right, another episode of the College HP Podcast. I am Joseph Pavone. Joel Pavone's here. Sean Dutra. We got a special guest, Zach Pelequin of thecollegehp.com.
What up, Zach?
Right, almost at the blog. We're way past the blog days.
Oh, wait.
What's going on, Zach? Welcome back to College HP. It's been a while.
It has been a while. How you boys doing? You taking care of yourselves or what?
Yeah. Man,
we good.
Listen, Zach, leave it to the College HP Podcast for like the first time ever, right? We did our looking ahead. Everyone had the Celtics going 4-0. You know, the Celtics did this one better. They went 5-0. And then they dropped two L's, including one against the Philadelphia 76ers. The new king of the East, Philadelphia 76ers, how the tables have turned on us so early, Zach. So, we need your take. We need what should we call this, guys? I don't know. I'm not going to say it's anything near fan base, right? You never wear those green goggles. You're always neutral, right? You're neutral take, I guess we'll say.
I think he's a biased commentator.
Okay.
Biased more way.
That you will look for the real reason why the Celtics are good.
Okay, yeah, a little bit of that. We'll also talk about your article that's on our website. Shameless plug over here on the Causeway Street Podcast. Head over to causewaystreet.com. to check out his take on this Celtics team, and of course we'll get into it right here. But also, I mean, we got obviously the Philadelphia team, the Philadelphia 76ers in the East, and what the Celtics are looking like right now is on the top of things to discuss. But we got to talk about also what Joe Mazzulla had to say after the game. Right, this back and forth between him and my guy Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe. Man, I got plenty to say about that. But let's talk about the game first with Zach. Zach, your take on this this loss, 106-103, Celtics made a heck of a comeback, right? When you look back on it, right, down double digits, going into that two minute mark in the fourth quarter, they had a chance to send them to overtime, right? You asked me, the Philadelphia 76ers obviously made a handful of mistakes, and they looked really scared. If you ask me, it's like, man, here we go again. Are we really about to go into overtime? And you know. Porzingis' three-pointer and didn't fall there. But overall, just what's your take on this team and what you saw against the Philadelphia 76ers?
Well, I think the Philly game really isn't too far off of what we've seen a lot of the last several years with the Celtics, where it really doesn't matter what another opponent's lead is on them. I think they are capable of coming back literally almost any number. I mean, they could be down 30, and I still think they have a shot going into a second half of any game, because they are one of the best shooting, scoring, one of the best teams, I think, in the NBA in terms of being able to make runs. You know, how often do we see them go on those 10, 15, 20-point runs where they're able to absolutely shut down other teams? Because they're one of the best defensive teams. They're one of the best offensive teams. So it doesn't really matter, you know, who they're up against. And, you know, in terms of Philly, I watched Kendrick Perkins, I want to say it was either last night or today, talking about how the Philadelphia 76ers are the team to beat in the East. And apparently six games into the season, they've become the beasts of the East with this James Harden trade. But when it's all said and done, it's the same 76ers team that it's always been. It's the same team that it's always been. And you saw it. They have that choke gene. And I love, Joel Embiid's a very nice player. He's an MVP, the defending MVP. Maxey, I think, is going to take a nice big step forward. But man, did they just have that choke gene. And I think Boston showed you that, even in small spurts, they can come back and they can beat what you would think to be the elite of the East in a very short period of time. They play 48 minutes in that same vein. This isn't even a game.
Right. I mean, that's the last thing impression you get. I mean, yeah, Philly won the game, but it was like, man,
barely.
Something could have easily, right, exactly, barely. It's like something just delivered that reminder on the way out. Like, yeah, you got this one, but we'll see you next week,
Who was?
Yeah, exactly.
It has that feel to it. It has that feel to it, for sure.
Who hit that three-pointer and like three minutes left in the game to go up by like 14?
Oh, it was, shit, I know. Fuck. Who the fuck was it?
Was it Pi Harris?
No.
Oh, McDaniels. I'm thinking of
the Minnesota game. Yeah,
I'm thinking of wow. Let's see. We can get into that a little bit, but yeah, we'll stick to this game.
There was a point in the game where Harris hit. I think it was Harris. Hit a 3-pointer. They go up 14 with like 2 minutes and 47 seconds left.
They went on a little run. They went on like a 10
to
some run.
They were on a run.
They were finishing up that big run. Right? Yeah.
And then literally Celtics said, you know what? Fuck this. We're gonna come back on this thing. And I was like, yo, same old Sixers.
Yeah.
They ran off like 10 old Sixers.
Yeah, the Celtics ran off like 10 points in like a minute or like less than a minute, something like that. Something crazy.
Yep. And I think, to be honest, 76ers are the least of our worries. Like, right. Embiid is not a problem in the fourth. And Embiid in the fourth, he can put 30 up in three quarters, and then you know what he's going to do in the fourth? He's going to get tired, like he does every time, and the Celtics is going to be fine.
I just love the defense, man. Like, and I know people will be like, oh, well, where was that all game long? But, man, that those last 2 minutes, what Drew Holiday means to this team now – well, even Jaylen Brown, you could say, right, when his offense was frustrating, and then he comes up with the big stops. I mean, all that stuff is so contagious, if you ask me. It doesn't matter which starting five is out there. I mean, obviously, Al Horford, you can put him in and out of that lineup, and you get the same result against the Philadelphia 76ers team. But, man, like, when they're on a roll like that, I just feel like it doesn't matter who they're playing. Like, any team is vulnerable for that. You know what I mean? Is any team the Celtics, Celtics roster goes up against is so complete 1-5 that they're able to do that. And you saw that against the Philadelphia 76ers team in their house. And it's this early in the season. Like, obviously, I'm not saying the sky's falling right now and that the Philadelphia 76ers could be a team that flat out beats the Celtics in the best of seven series. But you just see the differences between where the Celtics are right now where Philly is, and it's just like, man, I still love the Celtics' just overall approach. And 3 weeks, 4 weeks into the season, they're not going to be, or you think, or you hope, you're not going to be making those same kind of mistakes that we saw in that Philly game, in the Minnesota game, and what we saw a lot of the time last year, especially in that overtime period against the Timberwolves, where it was just like, okay, we got to start chucking up these shots, we got to start hitting home runs right away, and you look at what Minnesota did, and it was the complete opposite, and that's why they won that game, right? They fed off of those mistakes.
What I loved about the Sixers game, Porzingis had the ball in the last shot. You know what that was last year? Marcus Smart. Would have had that same shot, right? So, same result, missed it, right? But if you're going to say Porzingis has a shot versus Marcus Smart has a shot, and to win the game against put in overtime, whatever it was, I'll take that all day long,
Well, the thing that the Celtics did in that, the last 2 minutes of against Philly versus the last 2 minutes of regulation against Minnesota they were playing with Porzingis, right? They weren't really doing that against the Timberwolves in the end of regulation or even into overtime. You kind of just had like Porzingis just kind of running around there, like, all right, going back and forth. But they were getting the ball to him more against Philly. And yeah, he missed the potential game tying three. But I don't know, you live with that. First of all, you don't get into the hole. You don't you know, get down by that much. But yeah, Zach, you made a good
point.
You
know what I pissed about in the Philly game? The only thing I pissed about in the Philly game was we have Al Horford, who is a great Embiid stopper, or Embiid not stopper, but Embiid slower down there, right? In the playoffs, Embiid's in that fourth quarter, and Jrue Holiday did a great job, but Jrue Holiday ain't going to be guarding that motherfucker in the fourth quarter in the playoffs. Like, that's not going to be happening. Horford's on it. You know what I mean? Like, that's
what you saw Mazzulla make that adjustment often throughout the night, though, and I thought he did a good job with that.
Right? Yeah. No, the biggest thing that I thought was
especially in that spin right before he brought Porzingis in for good in the fourth, like that was a great call to put Al back in. I think it was like around the 9 minute mark, and that slowed Philly down a bit.
Well, I think Al Horford in the fourth, I mean, Embiid in the fourth is definitely 40% of the player he is normally, but Drew, there was a play that Al Horford, Embiid had the ball in the corner, and Drew was guarding him, and he did a great job guarding him. Air ball turned into a 24-second violation. And I was like, that's great. And for the record, Al Horford needs to play Embiid, and Jrue Holiday can play Embiid a little bit better than Marcus Smart can. And that's a lot. That's saying a lot for me. That's saying a lot.
Why do we have to keep talking about Marcus as if like he was just traded yesterday?
What?
How many times are we gonna have to drop the Marcus Smart's not walking through that door anymore?
Yeah, why don't you? I don't know.
How dare you?
How dare I completely not want to talk about Marcus Smart anymore? Because I don't know, he's not on the damn team. All right. I like your late game execution with the Celtics identity used to look like. Yeah, we used to have flashes of that. Absolutely. If Tatum and Brown didn't want to rise to the occasion, Marcus wasn't afraid. But I just feel like, man, this team, it's so like I'm past what they looked like last year. And hey, even though we got a glimpse of that in the late game execution, I just don't think this is the type of team where you say, man, like they got to make sure that they make the right decisions down the stretch, or the guards have to like stop comparing what they do to what Marcus Smart did last year.
Hey, I started this conversation with saying I was thankful for Porzingis taking that shot to Marcus Smart. All right,
that was good. We didn't have to hear Marcus Smart after that. You kept doing that.
All right. So, is anybody concerned when Tatum and Brown are not going offensively, even though this roster is quote deep, so to speak? But
can I tell you one thing that I think about that exact point? When Tatum and Brown didn't have it last year, Tatum or Brown forced to have it. There was very few games where there was both Tatum and Brown didn't have it, right?
I feel like that's what happened against Minnesota, especially in overtime.
Yep.
They got to have it. Like, this is it, you know? But no, I mean, Joel, to answer your question, I thought the Celtics did a good job of adjusting to what the defense was giving them, and that made other guys step up, right? Whether it was Derek White or whether it was Jrue Holiday, like those are the options that obviously this team didn't have last year. But you also look at Derek White, but I mean, like, you also look at their approach, where again it was like if Tatum and Brown didn't have it, there were instances, especially in the fourth quarter, where it was like, oh no, we got to get Tatum his touches, or we got to get his looks. This team, especially in transition, like they're so equipped to just feed off of the defensive stop, right? Which they finally got a few of those when it mattered most in that fourth quarter. And it's a layup almost every single time. Like that's how quick they are in the sense of, reading the defense, reading the opposing team's offense, and just finishing on the other end. And then you also have, the string of stops that I feel like the Celtics team you didn't have that same type of approach to the defense that we saw last year, right? Or 2 years ago, I should say, with Ime. And it's like that and beyond because of what they're able to do with their flexibility and guys like Porzingis and Jrue Holiday. But you look at the comeback made against Philly, man, it's just like that's a win in a couple of months, right? Like you, at least from what I've seen, right? You're expelled to a certain extent in the next month or so, where it's just like, man, there's a good chance that doesn't happen again. What we saw in Philly.
All right, so you're saying that this team is capable because, you know, on back-to-back nights they shot under 40%. They're still able to win these games. So in a couple of months from now, you think those are wins against Minnesota and the 76ers.
The Minnesota one is different, man. Like they played the Celtics defensively. That was the best I've seen this season. And you look at, you know, size and athleticism. Like that's why I think these next two matchups coming up. I won't mention the teams. We'll get to Sean's segment soon. But You look at the next upcoming matchup, and this is the same sort of problems, right? You know, that size and athleticism, and you know, after Porzingis, and you have Al. How the Celtics address that in the front court all season long will be interesting for sure. You know, versus the bench and combination of Cornet, who did have a good performance in Brooklyn. I give that to Cornet. I know a lot of Celtics fans have been saying like, oh, you know, you can bury him in the bench now, but you know, he's in the mix. I mean, he has to be. You look at the bench, how thin this bench is right now, and the front court, and guys like Porzingis and Alper, and let's face it, neither one of these guys are going to play anywhere near, you know, 80 games this season. So that's something that you have to keep an eye on, sure.
Okay.
I mean, my two cents on the whole entire Brown-Tatum question of whether or not you have to have those guys going, of course you do. Jason Tatum is an MVP candidate. He's one of the top 3 to 5 players in the NBA. If he's not going, you're going to lose games. That's the way it's going to work. And especially if you're number two, quote unquote, Jaylen Brown is not going to show up at the same games. You're going to lose effing games. Like let's be real with ourselves. I don't care how good Porzingis is and how good, you know, Drew Holiday and the rest of the roster is. Those are the top two guys by far, no questions asked. And the fact that, you know, neither one of them bothered to show up in that game. Listen, it's game number 6 or game 7 or whatever it is. I'm not going to, you know, jump off the roof right now, but when playoff time rolls around or when, you know, big games roll around at some point in the near future, like within the next couple of months, they got to show up. Point blank. You know, I'm not going to lay it at the feet of Porzingis and Drew Holiday and Derek White and Al Horford to have to pick up the slack. Those two are the superstars. You're about to have the highest paid player in the history of the NBA on your roster and Jaylen Brown within the next 12 months. Show up. Prove to us.
Oh, no, I mean, like, my whole thing is the way they approach that fourth quarter, though. Like, when they were in panic mode,
they're always
wrong. Like, you look at last year's team, like, when that team was in panic mode, 12, 14 point deficit, 5 minutes ago, it was like, Jason, come save us, you know? But that's not the case with this team. But yeah, of course, like down the stretch, the last couple of minutes, yeah, Tatum's got to get going, which he did, you know, and that overtime.
16 points.
What's up?
I think he finished with 16 points last night, didn't he?
Yeah, 16 and 15 rebounds. Yeah.
Right. But then that
can't happen. that's what I'm right. saying. I mean, he's an MVP candidate. He can have one of those nights every once and again, but that can't become something that happens very often.
That can't be the norm. But my whole point is that, like, I just don't think this comeback ever happens last year without, because any time that did happen, because I'll give the Celtics credit. Obviously, they did have those games where they did make those comebacks, but it was with Tatum and Brown going off in the fourth. You know what I mean? Always had to be one of those guys carrying it. Whereas this team, the way they were able to get back into this so fast without, you know, either one of those guys really taking over was huge. But again, I don't know if that happens 2 months from now against this Philly team or any other team. You know, I'd be shocked because I think chances are one of those guys is going to close it out and something's going to come up with a W.
Yeah,
for me, I think that the Celtics got a Jaylen Brown problem right now. Like,
well, he's not looking too hot right now.
He has not played at all. I'm not putting him on the whatever 30 million a year, 35 million a year, 40 million a year thing he's on right now. I'm just talking about playing as you were.
The funny thing is that it's like way higher than both of those figures. But
yeah, I'm saying to play as you were last year at this point. Jaylen Brown is off, and Jaylen Brown, I think, finding his way into this newly
revamped offense will be the biggest question about the Celtics going forward.
That's a fair point, Zach. What do you think?
I think that's a really good point. I was actually going to pose the question to Sean that, I mean, because if you think about it, you go back to the build of the big three back in 07-08. You had Paul, who was already here. You bring in Ray, you bring in Kevin. And who was the guy who was going to sacrifice to be able to make sure that there was enough basketball for the rest of the group? And I've thought since this addition of Porzingis and the addition of Drew Holiday now, somebody, if not a couple of those guys, were going to have to give up shots to be able to make it all work. And is Brown maybe that guy that's going to have to give up those shots? And if he's giving up those shots, and if he's not the offensive guy he was a year ago, where does he regain that value? You know, does he become more of the defender we saw a couple of years ago where he was a borderline, you know, all defensive candidate? Or, you know, where does he make up for it to really regain that value?
That was my prediction. My prediction was that he could finally like kind of fulfill that role, which not to say that he's like an awful defender, but like that was sort of like the makeup, or at least the how he was projected to be, sort of more of a two-way guy who gave you a lot of offense on the other end, but could lock down one of your better defenders, I mean one of your better scorers on the opposing end. However, I just feel like organically that's going to happen, but I don't think it has to be like established in a way where it's like, okay, you know, make sure that he gets his touches here and there, or if he's not getting it at a certain point in the game, oh, you got to make sure Jalen gets his setup. No, that's going to happen organically in the game. And that's a lot of the times I feel like, again, it's going to happen naturally if he's focused on that end of the floor defensively. Because let's face it, once he gets a turnover, once he's in an open space, he's off to the races. Very few people can keep up with that. And that's an asset for the Celtics team, obviously, because, you know, having that athleticism and what he's able to do in the open floor. But at the same time, you know, you don't want it to turn to a point where if he's not going offensively, he gets to that point where, and I saw it a few times last night, or maybe I should say a handful of times last night, where it's just like, okay, I got to make myself get going, because otherwise I'm not going to get the ball again, you know? And he starts doing that dribble, dribble, dribble thing. He starts trying to cross up three people at the same time. That shit drives me crazy. And, like, that's when I saw flashes of that against Philly, and I'm just like, okay, if that's your way of saying, okay, I got to get my offense going, and this is the only way I know how, then that's going to be an issue for this team, because that's not what they're doing right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, what I was going to say was if the motto this season is – you know, we're going to sacrifice, you know, our total points or whatever the stat line of what, you know, every player usually does for the betterment
or whatever.
Yeah, for the betterment of the team, then, you know, that shouldn't be an issue. But, you know, he did have a good point the first week of the season that, like, every game is going to be different. One night it might be Jalen. One night it might be Porzingis. Let's be honest. Or maybe it's just me. I mean, Porzingis is better than I fucking thought he was going to be in the system. So then, Porzingis.
Yeah, but Joel, but tell me he's not, and I'm not going to, before Celtics diehards start screaming at their damn podcast or whatever they're listening to right now, I'm not saying he's on the same level as KG, but at this off, if you look at the offense and the way they run it with him at the top of the key, whether it's shooting, whether it's passing, you know, give and go, like, it's very KG like, and you wonder how much of that's going to interfere with how many touches Jaylen Brown gets if he's doing the two man game with Jaylen. You know,
it's KG like, but it's also Horford like, because like when he first came to the Celtics, there was a lot of that as well. So he's obviously, I don't want to use the fucking word unicorn, but on the offensive and in the defensive end, right? But I've seen flashes of Jalen and Tatum trusting him or trusting, Drew Holiday. And so, like, if you see, you're going to see that there's some nights where, yeah, Tatum might not have it offensively. You know, he's not putting up the points, but like, he'll have like, you know, at least, that's where it looks like it's going for some nights. He'll have like 10, 11 assists. Jalen, the same thing. And so it has to be that way because, like, quite frankly, like off the bench right now, it's like how's is your guy right now? It's like, okay, all right. So you kind of have to, you know, get it going with that starting lineup of the top six players or whatever the case may be. And if guys are out because of load management, this, that, and the other, there's got to be an equal amount of touches, but it's going to be different from game to game. It's, I don't know. I guess it's just going to be different. The top three like scores every night is going to be like different. I look at it like that.
I mean, that was the case throughout those first five games.
Yeah.
It was a different league score, you know? So, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's the, like, that's the product of a high power offense, right? Like, that it's anybody, in, you know, any given night could be your league score. So, I don't know. We'll see what the Celtics team does. But, you know, after the game, to see Joe Mazzulla up there, right? And he's asked about settling. Celtics team settling for threes, settling for shots, settling for, you know, 3-point shots well before they even got down to, by double digits. By the time they got down to double digits, that's when they sort of like changed things up. But that's essentially what got them into that hole. And not only does Mazzulla cite an old article, and I don't know if he's just reading Gary Washburn's like archives, or does he just look up like old articles that related to the Celtics and the 3-point. Like, if I'm Gary, that would be my question to him. Like, I would have been like, what's your Google search? Or is this just like me that you're looking up? But either way, he brings up the fact that he brought up that Gary wrote an article 7 years ago that highlighted the fact that the Celtics shot, what was it, 42 3-pointers, which is only five, you know, fewer threes than what we saw against the Philadelphia 76ers. And, sarcastically, the way I see it, right, say like, oh, you were ahead of the curve. Or maybe even if that wasn't sarcasm, right? Oh, it looks like you were ahead of the curve there. Like, just the overall, like, vibe out of it. I'm like, what do you guys think about it? Like, to see him up there, to cite his old article, and then talk about how the 3-point shot has evolved over the years, or at least in my opinion, that's the way I took it, right? And that nothing, you know what I mean? Like, I almost took it as like, man, like, you're still stuck with this take. And as he said, like, what's your obsession with the 3-point shot over the last 7 years? Like, is he petty? Is this him being defensive? Like, what do you guys think about this?
I think somebody needs to ask him about the glasses, first off.
Glasses. He's got an eye thing. He's sensitive to light right now.
I mean, the fans want to know.
Pure loathing in Las Vegas? Is that the look?
I guess that is a look. I think personally, glasses aside, right? I think in, you know, Sway, you're in there, you know, more than any of us, right? When it comes to the reporters and being in the in scrums and press conferences or whatever. But I think that Joe knows that he can get Gary, he can catch Gary off guard a little bit and kind of mess with him. And sometimes Gary plays along, and other times Gary's like, that was weird. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I felt like he knows, I think he's been around long enough to know, like, all right, I can mess with this dude today. And to make it a bigger point that just like, I don't care, so to speak, with what you guys have to say or what you guys have to report about or what you guys ask me. Like, if I feel like answering it, I'll answer it. But if I feel like having fun with it, I'm going to have fun with it.
Yeah, he's got those Belichick vibes.
Sort of, but like, exactly, not because, right. You know, because Belichick is more like, you know, you ask like this long winded question, he's just like, yeah, you know, I'm on to, you know, Cincinnati. And so it's like, all right, fuck you guy. So, you know, with Joe, it's not like these short ass answers. It's more so like, I already come in into the press conference, like, all right, you guys are going to talk about timeouts and you guys are going to talk about 3-point shooting. That's probably the most two things you're going to talk about, especially in a loss, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep you guys on your toes, and, you know, I'm going to maybe frustrate you a little bit, and maybe you don't ask those questions, or then, like, then, you know, the next person that's going to ask is like, shit, I got to think of another question because he's going to do that shit to me, or he's going to quote roast me or some shit. Some shit's going to go viral. I'm not going to ask that question then. Or I'm going to pass the mic to somebody else. I'm not going to do that. What do you think? I don't know, Zach.
I mean, there's really two things for me that I look at there. I mean, one is, I don't love that he does this, and he's done this a handful of times now, where he does this kind of dismissive kind of, I don't know, like he tries to push.
Like, honestly, I don't think he went to an article.
he tries to push the media in ways like Sean said, kind of this Belichickian kind of, you know, play the game with them and kind of, you know, kick him in the ass type deal, which is like, listen, if he was a 10-year head coach who had been to the finals, you know, a half dozen times and, you know, had a ring, like, it's like, all right, fine, you can play that game. But he's not that guy. He's a second-year head coach who's 35 years old, who has done nothing. Like, there's really nothing to his resume that's worth anything. So it's like, take it easy. But at the same time, Mazzulla is also, he's also the son of a coach who is a, he's a great steward of the game. And I want to give him credit here that I think what he is doing when he does this is taking whatever those questions are and making sure that whatever the focus is becomes him. And he's trying to take it away from the players. That's what I want to give him credit for. I don't know if that's necessarily what he is doing.
Yeah.
But I want to give him that credit and say that that's what he's trying to do, is saying it's not the players, it's you, you know, using almost that Belichick mind game of like, you're thinking that this is happening and it's between me and you, and try to keep it away from the players as much as he can, which if that's what he's doing, fair enough. I'm not going to get too upset about that, because I mean, that's a sign of a good coach, is he's keeping it away from the players. He's keeping it between the coach and the media. And, you know, hopefully that is what he's doing. But if he's just doing it for the sake of being a little bitch about it, that would not be great.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's always been like kind of the knock on him since he's been here. It's like, yo, like, what does he get off fucking answering questions the way he answers questions sometimes?
Yeah.
But you're right. I never thought of it that way in terms of like, you know, that he's kind of keeping it off the players, and it's just like, nah, you know, I did what I did, and you know, let's move on. And yeah, you guys make fun of me for not calling timeouts, and you know, I want them to shoot even more threes. I don't give a shit. Like, that's how we're gonna fucking play, and I don't care what you got to say about it. But then at the same token, I feel like when there's losses like this and the Minnesota game, he's always like, yeah, we lost, but we did this good, and we did this, and you know, it's just like, there's no such thing as a good loss though. Like, a loss is a loss regardless, right? So I think he's always like, not always, but sometimes he's like, look at the bright side. There's a silver lining. And I don't know. With a roster like this, you can't get away with that for as long as he's has, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah. And in that, I was thinking about that today when, you know, we had talked the other day about, you know, about the team. And I mean, one of the big things that I think we kind of forget with Coach Mazzulla is that he took over a team weeks, if not maybe a month or two ahead of the beginning of last season. Mm-hmm. He didn't get to implement really any of his philosophies or anything. It was all, you know, it was all Coach Udoka. It was all of his stuff. He took that. He had to kind of run with it and implement anything that he wanted to on the fly, if you will. This is his first real year where he had a full off season. He was a part of, you know, the building of the roster. He was part of all the off season activities as a head coach. And this is really his start this season. And, you know, I was thinking about that after the article, you know, I wrote earlier this week, you know, that this is really the beginning of him as a head coach. And, you know, we're finally starting to see him in a light, in my opinion anyway, that he doesn't have the excuses he had a year ago. Now he's getting judged a little bit differently. I think it's going to be a little bit different of approach, both from the media, from him, from the players. And I think it is going to be a very interesting year as we kind of go along, because he was handed a team a year ago that it was just coming out of the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
He was expected to have this team as one of the top two or three teams in the Eastern Conference, if not right back in the finals again this year. Not a lot of brand new head coaches who are in their mid-30s, first-time head coaches in the NBA, have ever had that situation handed off to them. And when they have, I mean, that's a huge asking, you know. So it's a very unique position, and how he reacts to it, I think, is almost unprecedented. I mean, at least it's unprecedented by Celtics standards, where, you know, most of their coaches have had some level of experience prior to being given a team, especially a team this good.
No, definitely. Because, I mean, he's able to bring in the assistant coaches that I'm pretty sure he had a lot to do with, right? With, you know, Sam Cassell, you know, Charles Lee. But seven games into the season, and it's just like, he's got this like attitude, it is what it is, and I'm gonna keep doing that. And if I want to like hold on to my timeouts, and you know, I want to roll them over to the next game, even though that doesn't really happen, you know, like the thing with the media is gonna go on for the rest of the season and probably the rest of the time he's here, whether they win or not.
Yeah, I think that's just his personality and the situation that he's going to have with the media going forward. He's almost at the point where he could potentially make it an adversarial relationship with the media, which, like I said, I mean, it could be a good thing in a sense that he could be using it to kind of defend the players a little bit, but it could also be a huge backfire, because when this team really does struggle, truly goes into the tank and has a bad 10, 15 game span, I mean, the first people to help you out the door are going to be the media. So I hope he understands that. I mean, look at Bill Belichick right now. You know, you're a 2-7 football team, and everyone's trying to help you into retirement, and they'll do the same thing to him. I just hope he realizes that you don't necessarily want to make enemies with the media. You know, that's not the best way to do it. But I mean, you mentioned the timeouts, and which was a part of, not to pat myself on the shoulder again, but the whole entire the article. And I mean, the feeling that I have is that, you know, and this is coming from experiences that, you know, Coach Mazzulla is a very instinctual basketball guy. This has been my recognition of him early this season, is that when I played against him in high school, this guy was all about his instincts as a basketball player. He was very Marcus Smart-esque, if you will, in the way that he approached the game. My thing is I don't think he realizes that not everyone sees the game that he does. And I think that is maybe one of the biggest concerns I have with him as the head coach with the Celtics right now, is that he is very much, I think, assuming in a lot of cases that this team is seeing the floor and seeing the game that way that he does. And my fear is that a lot of great coaches have fallen to that trap. You know, a lot of guys that I played under when I was a kid, you know, whether it was high school, college, or whatever, they assume that you saw the game the same way that they did. And in doing that, they didn't make the moves to be able to, you know, call a timeout and say, hey, listen, here's what I'm seeing, here's what we should be working towards, and being able to reset the mindset on the floor. And that's what bothers me about this whole timeout thing, is that, you know, Joe, you're a year plus into this thing. You had a long playoff run a year ago. You should recognize right now that these guys are not very good at these spontaneous end of game situations.
Yeah.
They suck at it pretty fucking horribly. Like, call the timeout, reset the mind. And it feels like, and we saw it last playoff run. I forget which series it was, but he did it for a couple of games or two out of three games or whatever. He called those late timeouts. And when he would do that, it seemed like they would come out with a positive result. Yeah. So it's like, what do you think you're winning at by doing what you're doing? You know, because obviously these guys are not seeing the game the way that you think they are. And, you know, my critique is, I don't think Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown have proven that they have great late game instincts.
So, hold on. Glasses or no glasses? I don't get it. Yeah.
This fucking guy.
Jesus. That's a chunky.
Jesus. No, but like, no, but, you know, to add to that point, right? The other night against Minnesota, that's the first thing. One of the first things that Jaylen Brown was asked, he put up the three. Didn't really need the three, but he put up the three at the end of regulation, missed it, and his whole thing was like, "I wasn't sure if we had a timeout or not." It's like, if you're gonna be doing that in fucking, you know, February, March, that's gonna be an issue.
Yeah,
these are things you have to fix by then for sure. I mean, you look at the late game execution. And the whole, you know, the whole timeout thing. And that was always, I feel like, a talking point last season. But then going into this year, you're like, okay, you got Charles Lee on your bench. You got Sam Cassell. Like, these guys, they're not quiet, right? They're not pushovers by any means. And they also have a whole lot more experience on that bench than Joe Mazzulla. Although neither one of them has been the head coach. You know, like, that's the difference. You know, that's the advantage for Joe, if you ask me, to have those guys that you could lean on. And yeah, it's early in the season. They have to figure these things out, but it'll be interesting to see how that evolves, right? How this relationship evolves and how things go in week 4, 5, and 6. You know what I mean? Like, or even beyond that, because there's no way, if you ask me, you see a pattern in his approach in those situations, especially when you have those two veteran assistants that can always step in and are going to step in when they feel like it's necessary, you know?
Yeah, and that's got to be part of it, is that he does get that help from those assistant coaches. But in the moment, I mean, you've got a you're inside the final minute of a game. You have a rebound or a steal or whatever situation that gets you the ball back in possession. It's like, Joe, how many times do you have to have this happen before you realize just call the effing timeout, set up a play, and make it happen? Because, listen, like I said, I feel like last year, I'm blanking on the games that it actually happened, but in the playoffs, they did that a handful of times. It might have been during the
Philly series.
When they lost, this game.
Yeah, and they did it, and it worked because Joe's. I think Joe's a good coach. I think there's a lot there. I mean, I think he's going to have a very bright future in the NBA. But he's got to start looking at this and not just assuming that Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, the players on the court are seeing the game that way he is. And I'd hate to tell him, but I don't care how much you practice a late game, last minute, last second situation in a practice facility. It's not the same as when you're in the middle of a regular season game that is determining seeding or whatever it may be, or worse off in a playoff series. It's an entirely different environment.
On the road.
During training camp, they pumped in crowd noise.
At the
Arbeck Center.
Yeah.
the same way they did it in the bubble, right?
Right. But they went through the same. It's the same thing, bro. It's the same experience as crazy
defense. Philly, bro. It's the same defense. Thing.
But the reality of the situation is like, and again, I didn't play that high a level of basketball, but you've always practiced the late game situations. Okay, you got 10 seconds left, this happens, you know, and you go, you know, what's our immediate, you know, quick to play or whatever. And it's like, okay, that's all well and good. But if you get the ball in your possession, these guys are so, especially this team right now, this is the best starting five they've had. I mean, I dare say by the end of the year, or by, you know, at some point in time, we might be talking about this being the most talented, most gifted starting five that the Celtics have ever had. And I'm not trying to blow smoke. These guys are fantastic. This is one of the most talented, gifted teams I've ever seen them put together. The bench obviously has got a little bit of work to go, but in terms of a starting five, they're fantastic. Their ability to execute is fantastic. So if you can execute and you can put a play in place, why not call a fucking timeout and execute a play? Like, it's not that hard. Am I crazy here or what? Like, I don't know.
1 + 1 = 2, right? That's what
it is. I don't know.
All right, let's see what's on the docket. Let's see who the Celtics are going to play next. Let's see if Sean is still with us. Because we gotta...
He's asleep. Oh, there he is.
We got to...
What you mean?
It's about that time. We got to look at it. Here we go.
All right. Well, tonight, we got a big game. Big game. Big game. First in-season tournament game?
Yes.
For the Celtics. And first off, we need to work on that name of the tournament. Call it something cool. Like, I don't know. Sway, what do you want to call a tournament? Zach, what do you got?
We can call it the Adam Silver Cup.
I like the Silver Cup.
The Silver Cup. There we go.
There we go. All right. So the Silver Cup. It's happening tonight, actually, in Boston. They're going to have the court. And all the people that
they got the jerseys, you know, right? The city edition jerseys, I think.
They're gonna have the city jerseys and the court. So everybody that doesn't like change is gonna fucking spaz, bro.
They're gonna lose their shit. Yeah, you're right.
They already are losing their shit about this thing.
Yeah.
But I actually think it's really cool, and I'm down. I'm all in on the Silver Cup.
Yeah, Adam Silver Cup, yeah.
I'm all in.
Crazy. All right.
So, I am completely unprepared when it comes to this whole entire tournament thing, but essentially all they get if they win is just like, yay, you won the tournament, you get a little bit of money, that's it,
you get
right?
A little bit of money, yeah, pretty much. We've talked about it like before, I feel like personally this is for like the teams that are not going to get on national TV. Like, it's just having more eyes on the products, essentially, like the Orlando Magics and the Charlotte Hornets of the world.
I'll put it this way. If the Magic make it to Vegas, bro, that ain't bad.
I'd rather them than us.
Yeah.
Plus, the you know the role players get a nice little chunk of change. You know, they're probably going to make more if they win this thing than they would like on their you know half a million contract or like a two way player or whatever.
Sean, imagine if you got a freaking half your salary, you know, bonus or even double your yearly salary. You know.
Yeah.
Well, I'll put it this way: the Pistons should win this thing. All right.
We almost went an entire episode without the Pistons, but go ahead.
Did you see what happened this week?
I know I saw. Okay.
But this is the end season tournament, so it doesn't matter. This is for the Silver Cup. Don't worry about it.
The Pistons have lost in every way, shape, or form that you could lose a basketball game.
But they really lost that game.
I know they did. I wasn't surprised. Okay. Right. You don't even know about the Thunder game where they were up by 13 going 4 minutes left in the game, they're up by 13, they lose by 12. That is impossible.
So who the Celtics play today?
Who they got next?
All right, we got the Nets on Friday night, which will be a good game. In season tournament game. And then you also got the Raptors who haven't been awful. They haven't been awful.
Back to back, huh? Yeah, home games, that's weird.
Yeah, that is weird.
Saturday night at the Garden. Interesting.
I mean, you don't get too many of them.
Really don't.
You want to go?
We'll talk about it off the air. All
right, we'll figure that out. Raptors at the Garden, that's a good game to go to. Anyways, and then Monday night, Knicks going back a three-game homestand here, which is nice.
Finally, I feel like they haven't played at home since like the Miami
game. Yeah, the Patriots play at home every week, and the Celtics have not. So, I don't know. It is what it is. After the Knicks, we got the 76ers in Philly again. That will be a game that we figure out what the fuck we're doing, you know? As a team, as a squad, going back to Philly. That is what we're looking for. So I feel like there's easy teams to beat here. And then it turns into what kind of team are we? What are we going to be? You know, Knicks, then Sixers. So I'm struggling with it, but I say 4-0.
It's shocker. I think 3-1.
What do you mean?
3-1. They lose to the Knicks. The Knicks are mad after opening night. Zach, what do you think?
It sounds about right. I mean, it depends on who they play, because my biggest concern with this whole entire tournament is going to be, you know, who's getting what minutes and how many, you know, how many games are they adding to these guys' legs? I mean,
yo, Zach, I legitimately told you who they play. That's the whole point of the segment.
No, who the Celtics are playing in terms of the players on the court.
Yes, yes. He's like, I just told you who they're playing.
I just went through the four. You want me to go through more games? Come on.
No, it's fine. No, he's talking about minutes, bro. He's talking about minutes.
Talking about playing.
I went through the schedule, and Zach goes, well, you know what? It really depends who they play. What the fuck?
Shit.
I like the chances of winning it though. Let's see, man. Let's see what happens. I mean, look, when you got the someone like Jaylen Brown who's involved in the you know player association as much as he is, and he says like he wouldn't use the word excited about it. I mean, it's like what is this about? Because at the end of the day, it still goes towards your regular season record.
Yeah.
So you should be excited about every game, no? Like, or am I getting too like not to get too like, you know, philosophical, or whatever? Like, about what's most important in life? But I don't know. I just thought the whole quote was weird to hear that from Jalen. It's like, man, like every game is important. Like, if it was a friendly or if it's a you know regular season, I mean a preseason game, I guess you can get away with that comment. But I just thought it was kind of weird. It was almost as if like he's trying to say like I'm not like going to be heartbroken if we don't win this thing. And this is my way of saying that, but it's just like, you should be excited about this, though. Like, you should be excited about everything.
Yeah, it goes towards
any game that's going to count towards your record should be quote unquote exciting.
Yeah, yeah. No, because It's funny because it's like the NBA, technically, this has been like in the works for like 3 years. I remember when the NBA was on hiatus. Well, everything was on hiatus back in 2020. And this was brought up. And everyone, I remember people just like, well, whatever. Whatever makes the fucking NBA come back or sports come back. Yeah, go for it. But then I'm still like, no, I'm serious. Like, I want to put this in motion. And here it is. And there's a lot of players that just like, I forget who the fuck it was. I want to say somebody from OKC, but I'm blanking on it, was just like, I don't understand what's going on when it comes to this in-season tournament. I don't know how it works. I'm just going out and playing whatever team they tell me to play against, and that's it. So I don't know if even players even know what's going on.
It doesn't make any sense. It's the same. It's Adam Silver and the NBA league offices trying to do this whole entire European style, you know, in-season cup bullshit that they do in soccer.
Yeah.
Is essentially what it is. And, yeah. and they do these cups over in Europe anyway, but yeah. It's just stupid as hell because it's like all you're doing is, so if I get it straight, they're basically taking regular season games and turning that into a subset into your record to play into whatever these playoffs or whatever the tournament is going to be after that, which makes no sense to me. So it's like, I don't know.
The MLS does the same thing with like the Mexican teams and the Canadian teams too. Yeah, it's the same shit.
I don't know. It's weird. I think if it adds any additional games or any additional strain to the teams, it's completely idiotic because especially for a team like Boston, where what is the number one thing that's going to be our issue being able to get a shot at being able to win a championship? It's health.
Yeah.
Right.
Very true.
You know, and if you're adding minutes to these guys, a Porzingis especially, it's like, I don't know. Seems silly.
Yeah. Well,
I'm excited for the new court though. And I'll be honest. They're not all great, especially the Chicago Bulls.
What the fuck is that, by the way?
The Chicago Bulls hurt my eyes. United Center wasn't for me. However, the Celtics one, I mean, look, it's something different. It's the first time they're doing this in Boston. Like, I don't know. I think it's pretty cool.
Indiana's weird too, but yeah, it's a few.
I get it though. You had to kind of go all out in that sense because, you know, when you look back on it 5-6 years from now, we're like, oh, that was the first year they did it because look at the fucking court. Look what that looks like. Yeah.
And I think the whole point was for that reason, right? Like you turn on the game and it's just like, what the fuck's up with the court? Oh, okay. This is an in-season game. All right. In-season tournament. All right. Cool. All right. Just a little spice to it. You know, a game between the Celtics and the fucking and the Magic. I keep bringing up the Magic, but there's other teams that need the I guess the eyes.
Yeah, NBA 2K was gonna love it.
I said 4-0, baby.
Are you serious? Wow. No. Nah, man. 3-1.
Yeah. That's the general consensus.
So shocking.
3-1, bro. There might be a stretch where they go at least 1-3. We'll see.
Nah, it's 4-0. You know why? We beat the Nets because it makes sense for the tournament. The Saturday night, that Saturday night game is the one that gets me.
Yeah, it's out.
The back-to-back Saturday night where it goes at home, Raptors come in Saturday night. That's tough.
The Raptors are tough, man. Like, that's a team I think it's gonna give them fits.
Anyways,
OG, Scotty Barnes, the whole gang.
Yeah, the whole gang can be there, but you know what?
You know Schroeder's gonna mess around, just like drop 25 or something. Like, you know, I don't know. I could just see it now.
4-0, baby.
Jesus.
All right. Let's wrap up this episode. The way we wrap up every single episode here on Cosby Show. Take our trip around the NBA with Joel's In Case You Missed It.
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 Joel, what did we miss?
Well, in case you missed it, the director of the National Basketball Players Association has stepped down after 2 seasons.
Oh.
Yeah. So, Tamika Tremiglio? I'm gonna go with that. Tamika Tremiglio has stepped down.
Fucking Tamika, you serious?
So, guess who's going to be the interim director right now?
Kyrie Irving.
No, but good guess. Andre Iguodala, then the freshly retired Andre Iguodala.
Iggy.
going to be the acting director of the Players Association. I don't know. I felt that was kind of a random choice, but that's just me. I know he's part of the Players Association. I don't know if he's one of the 50 presidents that the fucking Players Association has, because I know Jalen.
Yeah, why is there so many?
Jalen is one. Is who else?
Chris Paul.
Yeah.
Grant Williams about to be one, I think.
Karl Malone.
I don't know about Karl. Grant,
like, if you're heavily involved, you'll be a president. Like, that's the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. No, I mean, that's good for him.
Biggie.
You know, he retired. He retired after 18 years in NBA. So that's good.
Is he a modern day Cedric Maxwell?
Andre Iguodala?
Yeah.
Because of the whole winning the Finals MVP and.
No, it's because they both grew up in the same town. Yeah, man, obviously, because they fucking both won the Finals MVP when no one expected them.
I don't know, because I don't think I can ever hear fucking Andre Iguodala say, yeah, get on my back, guys. I'm going to take you guys to a championship.
You know, it's funny. One of the first episodes I did with Max, I asked him, like, there's one player you would compare your game to that you see in today's, NBA, who would it be? And he said Draymond Green.
Oh, the guy.
And then he couldn't stand him later on.
Yeah. Yeah, more so because Draymond was talking shit to him as if he wasn't standing right there.
I think he would take that back now.
Yeah, dumbass. Well, actually, it goes into my next story here. One of the Players Association presidents, CJ McCollum, is out indefinitely, in case you missed it. He has a collapsed lung once again because this happened to him 2 years ago when he was in Portland. When it happened in Portland, he had a cracked rib that led to
what?
He was doing crack.
No, that's just crap. He cracked himself. Like,
it kind of sounded like that, but no, he had a cracked rib that led to the lung.
The way he started to, he cracked himself.
He shit himself.
I'm like, bro, that's just a bad day, man. I don't think that's a thing.
Well, yeah, so that led to the collapsed lung. So 2 years later, it's happened to him again. He's undergoing further testing to determine how severe the collapsed lung is and how long of the process of healing. And so for now, he's obviously sidelined indefinitely.
Stuff is so scary, man. Like, I know we're fucking making jokes here, but like, no, in all seriousness.
I was laughing at Zach's face on the screen.
Oh, I just noticed that now. No, I mean, like, what happened with Bronny? You hear about other players with heart conditions or health conditions where, like, obviously you don't see them coming. You know what I mean? It's unforeseen, and you don't know if it's going to end your career, essentially, right? Like, how your body's going to respond. So that sucks, man. Especially because between CJ McCollum and Brandon Ingram, they were going to essentially lead that team, right? the Pelicans, man, but. A big loss.
When everybody's healthy, you know, they could easily, challenge any one of the four teams that whatever you want to throw in there for the West. But
Zach almost looks like that Pelican, the thing that they were giving out when I was down there. Remember that those hats?
Where at, in New Orleans?
Yeah, they it was at the for all the fans.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. Nah, I mean, I don't know if you guys saw McCollum's response to a tweet that had like, oh, breaking, collapsed right lung, and then like, there's a picture of him like holding his chest, and he's just like, yo, this is an insane, right? He's like, yo, this is an insane pic to post with this news, and he had like the laughing emoji and shit.
Yeah, who the fuck did that? Like,
and he's got like a wrap on his arm too, on his hand, and he's like grabbing his chest. And he's just like, oh, breaking, collapse right lung, like it happened in like the middle of a game or some shit.
Oh, let me tell you something, man. In today's age, right?
By the way, that was not to shout him out, but like because that I'm not saying it was like a random pic, but it's from Basketball Forever, that Twitter page.
In 2023. It's like, you gotta, like, when you're hiring social media people, like, it's gotta be a thorough process now because you can't just hire anybody. Like, people just don't have, like, the common sense. Even posting something like when Jaylen Brown was working on his left and it looked awful, like he was dribbling it all over the place.
Yeah.
And whoever was working social for the Celtics was just like, yes, this is the highlight we're going to have to post. You know what I mean? Like,
out of all things.
Out of all things. Yeah. And then you had the, I don't even want to say the other one. Maybe we should say that for after hours, but.
All right, we'll say that for after hours.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't, but like the way you said it, I'm intrigued.
It's like, you can't just hire anybody for social media nowadays, man. Nah, jeez,
seriously. Yeah, so the last time McCollum, you know, suffered his collapsed lung 2 years ago, it took him about like 3 weeks to recover from that, so we don't know yet how severe it is this time around. So you know,
yeah, they gotta figure out why that's happening. Like, that's the thing. Like, you can't just like rest up and, you know, like, and again, you hope it's not something that's gonna, you know, cut his career short, but it's like, man, God forbid something worse happens down the road. You're going to be like, well, what the hell happened between the first two instances, you know? Like,
yeah, definitely. No. Yeah. He's on a 2-year extension that he signed with the Pelicans worth $64 million. So he should be with them until the end of the 25-26 season. So,
yeah, how's Zion doing?
Zion was out for personal reasons recently this past week, and I have a sneaky feeling that it's because he's going to be a daddy. That's why he was out.
Oh,
yeah,
sweet,
yeah,
good for him.
Yeah, his former porn star side chick was happy about that.
I know the whole story, man.
In case you missed it.
I have so much to say, but I'm not even.
Yeah. We talked about that. I mean, a few episodes ago, but yeah,
we did
over the summer. Yeah.
Go check that out.
Yeah, check that out. You know, the archives. You know. All right, speaking of more injuries here in case you missed it. And this was another one. This is another, like, when I saw the.
Yo, I feel like you guys let Joe Mazzulla off the hook, by the way, with this damn archive work, but whatever.
Wait, before you go, are you talking about strip club?
No, we weren't talking about strip club. No, we weren't.
All right. Yo, mute your mic.
We'll let you know when we bring up the titties. Yeah. All right. Okay, so back to what I was saying. This was another notification that I got, many people got, when it said, Jamal Murray to miss the remainder, and I was like, oh shit, I'm thinking like the rest of the year. It was the remainder of the month. It's like, yo, who writes shit like that? Like, it's say he's out for the next few weeks. Don't fucking say the remainder of the month, because that's the, like, it said remainder and it cut off. I had to like click on it to see, like,
bro, you have no idea. I got him on my fantasy team, man.
Oh, well,
for personal reasons.
Well, that's why you were concerned.
For personal reasons, I was like, no shit, ESPN. I know he's out for the rest of the month. He's out for 6 weeks. Last time I checked, 6 weeks bleeds into another month, right? So, what the... this isn't news. Like, why... did they make that graphic?
No, but when I saw the... When it came in, like, the notification that I got, it said, like, out likely 3 to 4 weeks. Right.
Yeah.
When you open up the actual notification, but when it came in, I was like, "Yo, he's out for the remainder of," and it was like dot dot dot. You're like, "Oh shit!" You know, you're thinking he's out for the rest of the season, and I don't even have him on my fantasy team, so it doesn't. I was just like, "Yo, he's like another tough break for this dude," but no, he's got a hamstring injury and he's out 3 to 4 weeks.
Get well soon, man. Take care of your hammy. All right,
I need you back. I need you. I gotta take you off of my injury reserve, right? Is that what it is for you? Okay, cool.
Yeah, you're taking up a spot, my guy.
The best record in the league right now, huh?
Well, same thing goes for Anthony Simons. Like, come on, man.
Well, for me, it would be fucking Bradley Beal, Devin Booker. You know, like, get your shit together, guys. Come on. You guys supposed to win a championship this year, right? Come on.
You know? What are the chances you draft both of those guys?
And fucking fuck, dude. Fucking A. But yeah.
Yo, who'd you lose against recently?
So the next indication was it was you, motherfucker. You know who I lost against. Fuck you.
Yeah, it was.
You didn't respond to my message in the middle of the week, by the way.
You sent me a message on that thing? What'd you say?
You're gonna have to open up and find out. But it was essentially the same thing what I just told you right now.
people actually use that?
Nah, I guess they don't really, but yeah. So yeah.
Zach, you doing fantasy this year?
No. I haven't done fantasy basketball in probably 10 years.
Me too, bro. I came back out of retirement, and it's not going good for me. It's not going good.
Has it been 10 years or old? Maybe 8. But yeah, something like that. I think you just like that round number. Right?
Decade, yo. At least a decade.
It's like the writing thing, you know? You got to round up. It just sounds better. You know?
So, yeah. So, that's going to do it for this edition of In Case You Missed It. Hit us up on all social media platforms at Causeway Street. Hit up causewaystreet.com for all your Celtics rumors, news, and opinion. And you can see Zach's piece up there about the... what the missing link is between
great article.
Between Tatum, Brown, and Joe Mazzulla. So, again, that's causewaystreet.com.
Just one man's thoughts.
Hell yeah. It's one man's thoughts. He's not just our capologist. He can also write, too. All right? Man of many hats, so to speak.
Yeah. All right? Fucking Joey with his thin skin. Jeez Louise.
No, I think it's more just him choosing who he thinks he could like catch off guard. And I think Gary, I know he's your boy, but I think Gary's easy to catch off guard sometimes.
Yo, Gary would never. Literally because it was the beginning of the press conference.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But it's just funny to me because he sort of made a similar joke in the preseason. And it was sort of like one of those things where, like, you know, when someone's like joking, but they keep going with the joke and you're just like, wait, he's serious. You know what I mean? Like, it was one of those where it was like, I want to say, it was something like to the effect of like, also Joe, you know, I see you, you know, you guys shot, you know, this amount of threes or whatever. And he was like, yeah, but you know, in a loss, if you shot that much amount though, it'd be a problem. Right. And it was like, oh, you know, everyone kind of laughed it off, whatever, but it was kind of one of those, like he kind of held on to it. Right. And then he was like later on in that same press conference, how, you know, yeah, we shoot 40. I mean, if you shoot over 50, then, in a win, you don't mention it though, right? But if it happens in a loss, then it's a problem. But then I started thinking like, okay, that's the thing. But I felt like he got out of his system. Yeah. And clearly he didn't, because it was almost as if, and you could see in the little chuckle that he lets out before he actually responds to Gary's question, that he already had it in his pocket. He read that article being like, I know Gary's going to ask this. And the fact that it was the very first question, it was like, here we fucking go.
But that's another thing, you know, too. I don't think there's an actual article, though. I just think he just said it just throughout. Like,
oh, no, it's an actual article.
Oh, it is? Okay, cool.
Yeah. Well, someone posted it. But, like, the fact that you could, like, pinpoint that and bring it up in that moment was, like, again, one, you had it ready. And two, like, I don't think you just researched it right now. Like, you had that ready for a little bit. You know what I mean?
Like, it's like the next time Gary brings this up. Actually.
Fuck you, motherfucker.
Gotcha. And Gary's like, what made it extra
petty to me was at the end when he goes like, no, seriously, man, it was a great article. And then, not the end, at the very end when he goes, that was fun, guys. Have a good one. Like, come on, bro. Like, that's literally the equivalent of like, haha, I got you. I get the last laugh. And it's just like, no, man, you lost. So that's what matters the most. You know, it was just weird.
Yeah.
But and it's not like this is like after a week or 2 weeks of him getting trashed in the articles and everything. Like, if that was the case, okay. All right. You wanted your little mic drop moment. You've had it. You've been hearing it for a week or two. All right. I get it. After a win, right? You know, but this is just, I don't know. It was a little uncalled for, if you ask me.
Yeah, no, but I like, I don't know if you saw John Corrales' take on it, because
he said something.
He's had the back and forth with him too, but he rolls with it, right? Like, for the most part. And he was just like, yo, if us as reporters get to ask or criticize to a certain extent their jobs, then they could kind of do the same back. Like, that's his take on it, right? Like, in a nutshell. Not every reporter feels like that, though. It's like, this is, like, don't mess with me on my job. I'm not messing with you and during your job type of shit.
Yeah, but Joe makes it seem like Gary every week is just like, you guys see the threes this team shoot. You know what I mean? Like, that's been a take that he goes to often. Yeah. But it was, like, too early to be like, oh, here you go again with this bullshit. You know, it's like, well, there's a lot of fucking threes out there, you know? And you can say the same thing about the Minnesota game.
Yeah. But to Zach's point, like, if he's doing it to, like, protect the players, so to speak, I'll take the heat off the players, I guess, the best way to say it, I guess that's good in some sense, but if he's
he did that a lot last year.
Yeah, if he's just doing that to be like a dick, if he's doing that just to be a dick, then he's just like, all right, man, don't be a dick, bro. Just, you know, just answer the questions or don't answer the questions. But like, come on.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. Hit us up also on Patreon. That's patreon.com/causeway.
Yes, sir. Subscribe on that. We got a 5-minute clip out there that's available for everyone, you know, so you can get a taste of what the episodes are usually like.
A little sample, so
and you can find out why Sean apparently thinks Wedding Crashers is overrated. Crazy take.
Insane take. Not the actual crashing of weddings, but like the movie.
Yeah. I crash weddings every fucking weekend. Let me tell you something. No, talk about the movie.
So exclusive content. We're giving away jerseys. We had our first winner of the new season, and the next one is coming within the next couple of weeks.
What up, Merlin?
So subscribe and do the right thing, all right? Yeah, not only supporting us as a brand, but there's great content to boot. So do the right thing. That's patreon.com/causeway.
Joel's like, it's $3, damn it. Come on.
$3, you know, $1 for each of us, you know.
Yeah, exactly. $1 for each of us. You spend more of that on OnlyFans. Come on, guys. we know our audience. We know you
sick of it. So no, it's
gonna get rid of that Peacock subscription you don't use
for real. The Hulu,
one of those.
Yeah,
we all have one of those that we don't use.
You know, there's people who got like all of them. They got all of them, and they're just like, don't realize they're subscribed to all of them shits at the same time.
Yeah, it's stuck in the 2020 mode. I just canceled Paramount, which I feel like I'm going to regret at some point.
No, yeah. Then there's like, you know, Apple TV, and there's a bunch of those that you don't realize you're even paying for until you're like, well, I'm still paying for this. But that won't be the case if you sign up with us on patreon.com/causeway. All right.
Yes, sir. And you can win a free jersey, man. It's easy.
Yeah. No, so shout out to you, Zach, again for, you know, stopping by. It's been a minute, and you know,
appreciate you, bro.
We appreciate your latest article, and keep them coming, though. You got a lot to say.
Yeah. Well, I finally picked up Fubo down here in Pennsylvania, so I can actually see the game. So,
oh, nice.
I'll be plugged in going forward.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah!
Oh yeah! Where can they find you again on the interwebs, especially on Twitter? You got a lot to say.
Still pissing everyone off. Still pissing everyone off at OTW Sports Radio on X.
Still pissing off these green teamers. I'm out.
Amen. I got a lot less to say with Marcus Smart out of town now, so it's getting more difficult.
Zach's like, damn it.
Even though it finally happened, like what you were preaching for so many years, like, yo, just make him the fucking starting point guard and just be done with it. And they're like, all right, let's just ship him out now. He's good.
Yeah,
that's
like, yeah, you gotta do what you gotta do, you know?
Peace. That's what he said to him. Like, yeah, he's out. He's out of here. Yeah, good stuff, guys. So that's gonna do it for this episode. So, you know, we'll catch y'all on the flip side. Peace out.
See y'all next week.